Blog Talk Radio.
Come shine your light, open your heart, show us your gift that sets you apart. When you believe, then you can see that you are the star of your own destiny.
Hi, and welcome to the Honoring Hour. This is Lynn, and I am your host for the show. I hope that each of you are enjoying your holiday season and however you celebrate it. And if you don't celebrate it, I hope you're just enjoying your week. Wanted to give you guys a reminder that the Honoring Hour bit will be moving to Wednesdays in 2011. We're going to just try a little bit something new here. Every now and then it's nice to shake things up a little bit. And it will stay at the 11 o'clock hour on Wednesdays, with the exception of our first show, which is January 12th. That will be at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and we will be having Jose Ruiz back on here talking about the Fifth Agreement. So I'd love to hear from you all and what specific areas of the Fifth Agreement you'd like to discuss with Jose. He did a fantastic job when he was on here last time, and I'm really looking forward to having him again. And then we've got a lot of things lined up for the rest of the year. I'll be having the website updated very soon. Thanks for all of you who have been patient with me as I've gotten behind on that a few times. But I promise to try to be better in 2011. So I am really excited about today's show. I have met a wonderful woman locally in my area who knows so much about the food system and everything that's going on, and pretty much everything that's going on. And she's just been a fantastic resource, just a wealth of knowledge, and just, you know, how to get back to the earth and really become more involved with your food and active and everything. So I'd like to introduce and welcome to the show today Lois Smith. Let me open up her line here. Hi, Lois. Are you with us?
I am. Hi, Lynn. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Now, Lois, you described, your self-description is that you are a you're a mother of seven, you're homeschooling, homesteading, and home birthing, God bless you, and that you want to take responsibility for your life. Can you just tell us anything else about yourself and how you got involved with everything that you're doing today?
Well, the thing is, I want to make everybody out there realize that I was raised on sidewalk. I would never in a million years realize that I would be here today doing all of what I'm doing as far as trying to grow my own food and take responsibility for my life. And what I mean by that is we've given up so much of our own responsibility to the government that we don't even realize it. And when you start to try to take it back, then you start to realize how much freedom you've lost by allowing the government to do it for you. And one of my passions today is food, because as a homeschool and home birth and mother, I read a lot of books about health. And by doing that, I realized that, well, I couldn't find these foods anywhere. So I have a couple friends, and we got together, and we decided we'll just start growing it ourselves, because we couldn't obtain this food. We couldn't find it anywhere. And then we found out there were so many laws against us actually being able to have food, such as raw milk. So to have raw milk, I had 12 acres, so I was lucky to have some land. And I had to clear it. I had to put a fence up. I had to learn about a cow. I apprenticed under somebody that milked a cow, because I realized this food was such an awesome food that I needed for my family. I was willing to make that sacrifice. So if, on top of being able to homeschool, raise my children, cook dinner, everything else, I was out milking a cow. And the moment I did that, I found out that Governor Mark Warner at the time, he's a senator now, passed a law that said I was no longer allowed to drink milk out of my own cow. So I had to go lobby in Richmond now for my right to have a food as an educated consumer that I felt was the best food in the world. So that's basically how I got started, and educating myself. First, I started educating myself about health. then I started educating myself on how to grow the food that I needed to sustain my health. And that's just been a great challenge because it's, I don't think consumers understand that not only do you have to do all the work to grow the food, but now you have to fight the government for your right to have that food.
Right. So you're saying that when you were a little girl, growing up to, you know, milk a cow was not something that was part of your dream play as a child?
No. I never in a thousand years could I imagine that I would be out here milking a cow.
Right.
And raising pigs and chickens.
Right.
But I'm glad I am. But I think the thing that I'm not really pleased with is the fact that I have to leave my home every year. All year long, it seems sometimes that your mind is so boggled down with what the government is doing to stop you from doing this. It takes so much energy to answer emails and phone calls, get in the car and drive down there, find a parking spot, you know, away from the very life that you have created and you're trying to have. Now you're pulled out of that.
Mm-hmm. So you found out after you've gone through and gotten this cow that you couldn't even drink the milk out of your own cow. Right there, you could not drink that milk. And it wasn't hurting anybody else. There was just a
no,
law thing.
No. What happened in 2005, the government, for whatever reason, decided to change the milk manufacturing regulations. So what they did was it used to just pertain to cows, and now all of a sudden goats and sheep are in it. So I had friends for 30 years that sold raw goat milk cheese at the Charlottesville Farmers Market. No one ever got sick or complained, and all of a sudden they're no longer allowed to do that because the government deemed that it was unsafe. So what they decided to do was give it away free. But when they did that, people started having cow share. Well, they didn't want us to be able to obtain the foods that we really wanted, so they had to try to make it illegal for us to drink milk. That was their way of making sure that we could not get the foods that we wanted. For whatever reason, I mean, they basically say that it's unsafe, but I'm here in Virginia. There's a lot of states in the union that are basically, it's legal to have milk. In California, you can buy it in the store. So you don't hear that people are becoming sick in California and other places. In Pennsylvania, you can buy it off the farm. But here in Virginia, that was deemed unsafe behavior. And
I'm here to tell you, that raw milk is good. I'm not a milk drinker, but when I tasted raw milk for the first time, I was like, ooh, sold. I love
it. That's true. I wasn't even a milk drinker growing up. I didn't want to put it on my cereal, you know, or anything. I didn't like milk. And then when I read the fact that I tell people that if I was on a desert island and I could only take one food, I would take milk, my cow, because I know it could sustain my life better than any food that I can think of. So, I can really get into the sacredness of milk and just how perfect that food is for us. And the fact of the matter is that we're not allowed to have it. They're not even trying to make a way for us to be able to have it. It's just the Dairy Association has so much pull, they don't want us to have this milk. And I keep trying to tell dairy farmers that are going out of business at a record number in the state that if you could sell directly to a consumer and actually get $6 to $8 a gallon, could you stay in business? And their jaw drops because they get that about 100-pound weight. And I don't understand the brainwashing that the Dairy Association actually has in them. But that's just one aspect of what I've been through. And like I said, in my friends at Charlottesville Farmers Market for 30 years were no longer allowed to sell it. So from 2005, they gave away their cheese free, and people donated. Because for some reason, when it's free, it's not a health issue. It's crazy.
Maybe they
made
more health care.
I know. Well, they made more money giving it away because people just appreciated what they were doing so much that they would just donate more than the cheese was worth. So that's just one aspect that people don't realize, and I don't think we realize it as consumers, and that's what I wanted to talk about today, our roles as consumers. I didn't realize until I decided that I wanted good food how long farmers have been under attack by our government. And that really makes me sad to think as a consumer that I put food on my table and I really didn't have the appreciation for the hard work of our farmers when I sat down to eat because I've been so removed from that process. You know, we go to the grocery store, it's all there. We don't even think about how we got it. And I tell people, you know, they freed the slaves in the South, I guess, but they just moved it farther away because we live on slave labor when it comes to a lot of our food. And we need to think about that as consumers. We need to think about what it took to get this food on our table. And when I remember going down to the General Assembly and we were lobbying, and last year a friend of mine, I went with her, bought Food Inc., the movie, and if you haven't seen that, I encourage everybody to see it, gave Food Inc. out to all our legislators. Well, a lot of the secretaries would say, well, I went to a farmer's market, and I went to buy a chicken, and they said $4, and they thought the chicken was going to be $4, and it was $4 a pound, and they said they almost fell on the floor, and they found out the chicken was like $12 or $16, and I thought about that. And I thought, you know what, I cannot even put a chicken in my backyard without a house or anything, just throw feed to it for less than $12. And so that brings me to the thought that we think food should be cheap, but food isn't cheap. They just hide the cost of the food. If they're not taken out of your front pocket, they're taking it out of your back pocket. And I try to explain to them that if you go to a grocery store chain and you get a $6 chicken, you need to realize that that chicken that you're buying for $6 costs more than a chicken at a farmer's market where the true price is on that chicken, but the hidden price on that chicken at the grocery store chain, which isn't even healthy for you to eat, has environmental cleanup, farm subsidies, and health care. Because you're not even getting food that will sustain your health. So, you know, they take it out of your back pocket. You pay a lot of taxes for that chicken that you're getting that cheap food for. Because there is no way to get that chicken to the store at $6. And I try, and this is my illustration. If a farmer gets 1,000 chickens, okay, he has to pay for 1,000 chickens. He has a house. He feeds that chicken. Let's say because it's a mutated chicken, it's for 6 weeks, and it grows so fast that it's a race to get it to the processing before it dies. So they have this mutated chicken. It takes 6 weeks. They have to pay for feed. They have to get somebody to come and pick it up. They take it, get it processed. They take it to a distribution, and it finally gets to your store. Gas alone costs more than $6 for that chicken. And the most they can make on that 1,000 chickens is $6,000 when you get a $6 chicken. So where's all that money come from? Who's making any money? Nobody, because the government has to subsidize them with your tax money to pay their bill.
Right.
So as a consumer,
I never thought about that. That's clever.
Well, it's scary, really, because you're right.
Well, no, I mean, it's clever, you know, to point that out, because I never thought about that, you know. And you know, I always say to people, would you put water in your gas tank instead of gas? No, but they don't mind, you know, like right now in our area, $2.99, $2.98 for gas, for the low gas. But they're out there, you know, they're not putting water in their tank to subsidize that gas. So, yeah, exactly right. Why would you, you know, why would you cheap out on your food?
Well, it's taken me a lot of years to even come up with that image on what's really going on. And one of the reasons why, as a consumer, I just thought, fine, I don't want that food, so I'll start growing it myself. And I'm not going to ask anybody for anything, you know, with that live and let live. Well, then I realized that they're not going to let me just live. In 2006, when the avian flu was going to come over here and kill us and our children, they never said, I'm sorry, we've created a disease that might kill you. They said, if you have an outdoor chicken, you're no longer allowed to have one. You need to put it in the house. So I had, we were back in Richmond lobbying for the right to have a backyard chicken because we have our chickens outdoors and outside so they don't get the avian flu. That was just bad husbandry practice that caused that disease. And they also tried to make us have to obtain a license to have chicken in Virginia. And if it wasn't for the organization that I'm vice president of, Virginia Independent Consumers and Farmers Association, we wouldn't have that right in Virginia to own a backyard chicken. So, you know, a lot of people don't realize that every state has a board of agriculture. Some states, you actually vote the people in that you want, but in Virginia, the governor appoints the board of agriculture. So we have to go down there and fight for our right to have to grow our own food. So it's not even about, okay, if you want to grow for Purdue and those companies, that's your business. And I'm very conservative where I think that I'll do my thing, you do your thing, and that's the way it is. But they're not allowing us to do that. There is a big assault on small farmers and people being able to obtain their food. And it's been going on for a long, long time. And I feel really sad that I'm just awakening to that fact that farmers have been under such oppression for so long. And the ones that have survived are the ones that are willing to grow their food the way Big Ag says to grow it. And they really are sort of like, they're not really farming. They're doing piecework. Okay, you grow chicken, this person does this, and, you know, you do it the way we say, because Tyson and Smithfield, they're going to dictate to a farmer how much they get for that bird. And it's a system set up that doesn't reward people doing it the right way. You're going to get the same price for that chicken. Now, you can say, well, you have prime beef, but prime beef is only, what did they grade it, on the fat of that cow, not on how that cow actually got fat. So if you can feed them a bunch of garbage and make them fat, you're going to get better price for it.
Right, and I want to just take a second to say that I live in front of a cow farm, and this farmer raises these cows that are grass-fed, and then he sells them as they get big, and then the last 3 months, where, you know, the place that he sells them, they can feed them whatever, but because the majority of their life up to that point has been grass-fed, they can be considered grass-fed cows when the last 3 months they're just plumped up with a bunch of BS.
Right,
so
right.
That's a little trick in the store, too. You know, this guy's out here doing what the right thing for him and, you know, grass-feeding his cows because he knows that that's what's best for the cow. And
right.
Then, you know, he's taking them to the stockyard and they're pumping them up with whatever. And they're still being able to be sold as grass-fed cows.
True. Wow, I didn't know that. That's crazy. But, you know, the thing about it is the Cooperative Extension Agency put out a report that stated if every household in Virginia just purchased $10 a week locally, it would inject $1.65 billion into our local economy. And I keep going down there and telling them, what if we couldn't open up avenues for farmers like your neighbor to sell directly to the consumer? And make it easier for him and not more work, because they really are overworked already, to do that. And then we could buy from him. Instead of getting $1 a pound, he could actually get $4 a pound, which would make him sustainable. And we could buy $100 a week at a farmer's market or locally. That would inject $165 billion. Into the state's economy. I think that's half the budget. And everything I keep hearing from them is, it's a global market. There's so tunnel visioned into a global market for some reason, and I could go forever for that because the global market drives me crazy because I don't really think they're helping globally. The things that I'm reading about Monsanto and companies going overseas and through this global market. The global market is what I'm talking about when we're living off of slave labor of others for our food. And we're not even getting good food because it's just like the avian flu. I said over there in China, they're not even treating people good. Do you think they're going to treat chickens good? I don't think so. And so they, in big business, it's a global market. It's a global market because they want to be able to produce food cheap. And if we're getting it, most of our food takes a 1,500-mile trip to our family dinner table. How? That is so sad. And we're ruining other economies and environments to do so, mm-hmm. and our own.
Right.
So,
and I do want to say, too, you know, before we go too much further in the show, one of the things that I hear from people a lot is, oh, well, it's so expensive to switch over. It's so expensive to eat that way. And I will agree to a point. When you're doing the switch over, it does feel more expensive. One, because you don't know how to shop it. You don't know what to look for. And two, because your body's used to feeling heavy, weighed down with all the BS that goes in it that your body doesn't need and is constantly dealing with. Once you've made the switch, it's actually more economical because you don't require as much food, so we don't have the problem with obesity. You're getting the nutrients, and you're not filling yourself with unnecessary junk just to try to get heavy enough to feel full. So, yeah, I will agree to a point for those of you that are out there listening today or in the future. You know, if you're looking to switch, you want to plan smart when you're making that switch. You want to talk to somebody who's done it. You want to get educated and just know that it's a temporary setback. But if you think, and what Lois just said, if you went and you put $10 into the farmer's market and you shop locally, you know, that's, you know, $520 a year. You can't buy health care, hardly, insurance now for a family for $520 a month. Even individual insurance, you know, you're paying almost half that. So, you know, this pulls back on the need to be having so much insurance. You know, you're looking for health care here. How about starting with healthy food care and putting the health in your body instead of trying to, you know, put sickness in your body and then get it out. So I just wanted to say that up front for anybody who might negate anything that gets said here because they just chalk it off as too expensive. Think about what you're doing and think smart and feed the body right, and it'll treat you right.
I agree. That's one of the things I tell people. Our health care per month is outrageous. What if we start investing in health instead of sickness? You know,
right.
And you know, if we took that health care that we pay, which I don't even understand why it's health care, but it's sickness care, and we start putting it in our food, then it makes it more affordable. When we start investing in our health instead of, and what if we get sick from all this garbage that they're feeding us and it's legally allowed to feed us, but I might get you sick on my milk. That's just crazy, Eric. I don't even know why we're able to buy that. I think the fact of the matter is I tell people that, you know how I know I'm not truly a farmer? Because I had a vacation this year. But I will tell you, I did pay the price when I came back and the weeds in my garden were as big as me. We need to start supporting farmers that support our health. And it's going to cost more, but when you realize when I go get that chicken and I roast it for my family, then I take the bones and I put it all in a pot and I make a whole big thing of chicken broth, because chicken broth is so miraculous that you keep adding water and boiling it down, it just gets more rich and richer. Take some of that off, put it in the freezer for other dishes, and then make a soup out of it. So you've stretched your budget.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't do that because it's so convenient. We pop open a can, we pour it in when we need chicken broth, we, you know. So I really don't think, yes, like you were saying, right when you pay that price out, it seems to be more expensive. But in the long run, we can't even afford our food system and how it's going. It's unsustainable. We as consumers need to start saying, we're not going to live like this, because down there at the Board of Agriculture, a lot of the farmers, all the farmers down there, are worried about these Chesapeake Bay regulations. It will put them out of business. And those kind of regulations are very hard to live with. Personally, I think clean water is a top priority. How we do that as consumers, I'm really not into regulation. I'm into education. I like to educate people, and I tell my children here that if you don't learn to rule yourself, others will rule you. When you're doing something because it's cheap and you're doing something that you know is wrong, you need to stop doing it. If that's the only way you can make a living, then you're going to have to find another way to make it. But as far as farmers go, and I understand that they have been regulated, and I'm not against any farmer, I'm about consumers. When consumers say, I don't want a Purdue chicken, and I don't want a Tyson's chicken, I want my neighbor's chicken, that's when we can change things, through education, through sacrifices, because you're right. If we're taking more money out, then we might not have money to buy a soda here and there during the week. We're just going to have to bring some water along. We have to make those changes. We have to start looking at where we're spending the money. And that's what's going to change the system, not over-regulating people, but changing it by every time you spend a dollar on your food, you're making a political statement. And when Purdue can't make any money raising the chickens the way they do, they're going to stop. And sometimes I think people want to put it on the farmers all the time instead of ourselves. And one of the reasons why I say that is, you know, the farmers are talking about the runoff, and believe me, the way that some of these farmers do farm, the runoff is pretty bad. My manures, on the other hand, I put in my garden because manure in that sense is actually life-giving. What we created in those seed blasts and stuff is toxic. But when we stop looking at the Roundup Ready and spraying it on every dandelion that pops up in our yard, when we have a responsibility, you know, when we keep asphalting everything with the exact same store that's 2 miles down the road, that's causing problems. So we need to decide to make a political statement how we spend money.
Lois, can you take a moment for people who don't know, because I just so that we can get explained, what is a GMO? What is a genetically modified organism, and why isn't it good for you? And how does this all tie in? Because one thing that I have found out is some people have never heard of GMO, and other people have heard of it, but they don't know what it is, so they don't know why it's a problem. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. A genetically modified organism is when they take the DNA of another totally different, let's say a tomato, and they cross it with a pig. So you're taking DNAs of two different organisms and you're crossing them to create a more resistant such and such. Well, a lot of Americans don't realize that the European Union will not take our GMO food. And right now, our government's trying to force them to take it because of trade agreements. They don't want our food because we sent it over there to a scientist, and I don't remember his name, but when he found out there was no documentation and no really good studies, and what he found is that a GMO in a rat that was feeding, I'm trying to think of the product he was feeding it, might have been a potato, and to a rat. And a rat, 1 year in a rat's year is equal to 10 in a human. And he found out that the rat in 1 year of eating these GMO, and I believe it's potatoes, had a smaller brain and a larger liver. Mm. And when he threw it out to the media and got it out to the European Union, they said, we're not eating this. In America, we try to make laws that we're not even allowed to label that it's a non-GMO, let alone that it's a GMO. So they constantly, the industrial food system is constantly coming after us if we want it different, if we want to make an educated choice and say, I don't want GMOs. If you don't want GMOs, I would not eat any corn in America, any soybean, that soy oil and everything else made with the soybeans. I wouldn't eat any potatoes. As of right now, they're trying to get the sugar beet genetically modified. If I had done that, and so I would just Google sugar beet GMO and see what kind of fight's going on with that, because you realize once they do how much sugar we eat in America that they get from the sugar beet. And the other thing, they're trying to GMO alfalfa right now and salmon. And this is their reasoning. Salmon is the most sought after and eaten fish in America. And as an educated consumer, I realize it's because it's the only safe fish to eat at this point in America because of what they've done to the waters and stuff around us. And so consumers eat a lot of that. So now they decided because we want so much of that that we will make a fish. We will GMO a salmon. And they said, well, you shouldn't worry about them getting out in the wild and contaminating them because they're sterile. Well, isn't being sterile a sign that there's a disease already? And all these GMO plants and organisms, they can't reproduce after their own kind. They can come and destroy your crop because they can somehow breed yours and make yours a GMO. And once that happens, Monsanto owns your crop. So there's a lot of issues like that with a GMO. And in America, you're not alone if you don't know about it, because they work very hard for you not to understand that concept.
Right, and this sounds like it gets really complicated when you're saying, because, you know, you said once, like, some of this GMO stuff gets in and cross-pollinates with your crop, which may be pure, Monsanto then owns it. You know, so that, you know, that sounds like it gets really
patent.
Neat.
Well, they have a patent on it.
Right. So this is why you go to the General Assembly and advocate for yourself and for others who are just clueless that this is going on.
Well, you realize that Big Ag has an agri-lobbyist. It's called agribusiness. She's down there. Now, Farm Bureau is kind of midstream. They really go towards Big Ag more than the little guy. And even though they have Save Our Food, it's all government inspected. And the organization VICFA, which is Virginia Independent Consumers Farmers Association, is about direct farmer-to-consumer trade that's unregulated. And we think that's an important aspect because it fosters the availability of locally grown and home-produced food products. So the reason I'm telling you this is last year, we went and we lobbied for the pickle bill. In 2008, we passed the kitchen bill that stated you can make jams, jellies, candies, and baked goods out of your own kitchen without the initial inspection. Sell it to your friends and neighbors in that farmer's market. That's direct farmer-to-consumer trade. You know where you got it. It's not behind a veil. So you've got it, and we wanted it. They said pickles are too dangerous. Jams and jellies and all that is okay, but pickles are too dangerous. Well, no one's been sick yet for jams and jellies and their candies and baked goods. So we went back last year to lobby for the pickle bill, which did not even come out before. We actually did a segment on your radio show last year on that. Well, this year we're trying to find a sponsor. I'm hoping that my Senator McDougal, and if anybody's in McDougal's area, please let me know. But he's redrafting the bill for us, and I'm hoping that he will sponsor it, but I'm not sure on that. But we're going to try again this year. But I know we already talked to agribusiness, and they said pickles are way too dangerous. The sad thing is that there is the law states that a nonprofit could have a one-day food sale. So on at the Monticello Harvest Festival on the lawn of Thomas Jefferson, we sold homemade pickles to people. And I just never even thought about it, but all these people were eating pickles, and they've never tasted a homemade pickle. They never realized the flavor, because the only ones we're allowed to have legally are these dumbed-down versions of vinegar and no taste. I mean, my kids don't like sour pickles. And I grew up eating pickles. Well, I can't understand why they didn't like pickles. But now I realize it's because all they've ever had and even allowed to have were these sour pickles. Well, I mean, to think of the cinnamon and you know, the pickling spices that are in a real homemade pickle, you, if you never had one, you just don't realize the pleasure that you're missing in something so simple. And it's so filled with vinegar. Now, agribusiness lobbyists is telling the General Assembly that they're too dangerous. And then they bring down all these government officials to tell you how it's too dangerous for your own good they're there. And they bring out people that have actually been able to sell their pickles in, like, Food Lion and stuff. And they said, if anybody gets sick on a pickle, it'll make everybody stop eating pickles. Well, it seems to me that if you got sick on an unregulated pickle, it would make you want regulations even more. So I don't think their reasoning makes any sense. And I really don't think, and you realize the pickle bill says it's produce that you grow yourself. So it isn't like I can go to Food Lion and buy cucumbers and come home and pickle them. I actually have to grow them in my garden, bring them in my house, and can them.
What about the homemade pickles is supposed to be so dangerous?
Well, I mean, they said that, oh, you can get botulism. And in theory, you can. You can get botulism from any food. You can get it from foods that they're selling you. The salmonella from the filthy processing plants are so high, just go to the FDA recalls, and you'll realize that this black pepper gave salmonella. So you're not even really safe. It's a false sense that you think that these government agents are going to keep you safe, and they know they really can't. And so homemade pickles are as safe as it gets from your food system. And, you know, I've had people come up to me, food inspectors, and argue with me about raw milk. Well, I said, as long as you're allowed to sell dairy meat, deli meat in all these stores that is the biggest carrier of listeria, talk to me about food safety. And they know it's true. The biggest carrier of listeria is the deli meat. They're legal to do that. And so you're going to worry about that I might give somebody listeria? Well, I think I have a better invested interest to keep you well. One, you're my neighbor, okay? Two, I tell people I have a cow share. When they come to my house, food safety, we drink it, okay? Are you willing to eat the food that you're selling to people? I think that's a big food safety. And now you'll hear these things on the news about how the terrorists are going to get into our food and make it unsafe, you know, and all these boogeymans are jumping out of the closet. Well, the sad thing is that half billion egg recall came from two farms.
Wow.
Under how many different names? Two farms had a half a billion eggs. That's crazy to me. That food safety is knowing your farmer, knowing where your food is coming from. No terrorist is going to come to my backyard. And
come
so they do that so they can pass more regulations to keep us safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did with the Tester Amendment, the S-510 food safety. We realize that the food system is broken. So the really ironic thing and the victory, I think, for small farmers is that once we got the Tester-Hagen Amendment on the S-510, Big Ag came against it. They didn't want this bill to pass all of a sudden. A lot of people on my side of the fence didn't want it to pass either. But it's a good thing that we got the Tester-Hagen Amendment because it did give us some exemptions, like $500 million. If you don't make $500 million, not million, you're exempt from certain things. And I realize the government's going to keep trying to come after small farmers. And that's why consumers need to wake up and start supporting them and calling their representatives and going down there and making appointments with them and telling them that we want real food from real farmers.
I'm sorry, Liz, what did that bill, what was that bill really saying? Because people that, that don't follow this regularly, you know, can you just simplify what that bill was saying prior to the amendment? And then, you know, like you just said, after the amendment, obviously there was some exemptions. But what was bad about that bill?
this bill was lumping all farmers into one category. So it didn't matter if you're Del Monte pineapple plantation, or I was just in my yard growing a couple pineapples to sell at a farmer's market. They wanted me to be under the same regulation as they were, which would ultimately put small farmers out of business because we don't have the capital behind us to live up to those kind of regulations. And anybody, and that's one thing that you have to realize about the expense of food. When we're forced, like in our processing place, and I'll talk about that in a minute, your food goes up. So when we have to go and fight the government and do all this, of course, it's going to go up. But if you have, when they try to make you do a microchip in all your animals, Tyson's, for their chickens and their hogs, like Smithfield, would only need one chip for the whole lot. So if they had 1,000 chickens, they only had to have one chip. If I was out here maybe growing, let's say, 50 chickens, I would have to have a chip for each one of them.
Why? Why could Tyson's get away with one? And you'd have to have one for each.
Well, because they have them all in one house, and they put them all in certain trucks. And the traceability to Tyson's, evidently, in their minds, is easier than me at a farmer's market saying, I grew this chicken. I don't really understand that reason, and there's not much that the government ever regulates that I truly do understand. But that was their reasoning. And you realize in Virginia that if you own a sheep or a goat, as of last year, you have to have a microchip. You have to have a premise identification, which will take away your right to a search warrant. That gives them the right to come on your property anytime they want. Mind you, you already have an address. So why do you need a premise identification? And that's why. Now you're in the national herd or the state's herd. And so they can come on your property and inspect what you're doing, and you have to keep records for 5 years. And if you don't, if you take your goat that's sexually intact off your property, it's a class one misdemeanor. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. So we were going to be under the same regulations as Dole and Del Monte. The Hagen Tester Amendment actually gave some exemptions. If you don't sell within 250 miles, if that's where you sell, and most of your food is sold direct to the consumer, and you don't make more than $500,000, then you're exempt from some of these regulations. Mm-hmm. Now, the good thing about this, and even though Big Ag, the moment they found out that we got the test amendment on, and most of us just wanted the bill to go away, But if it wasn't going to go away, then we should have the Tester-Hagen. The Tester-Hagen Amendment shows that government has made a distinction between big ag and small farmers. And that's why they wanted it off there. So I think it's a little bit of a victory on that end, that they actually made a distinction and that there is a difference.
So let me ask you, let me just simplify this for my own brain. I would have been, my little garden out back, which, you know, didn't really do very well this year because I'm not a savvy gardener and the weather was kind of strange for me, but I did have a really good Swiss chard and lettuce crop. And I was giving that to my family because it was too much for us to eat without going bad, especially the lettuce. So if that amendment hadn't been on that bill, I would have been held to the same regulations as Dole and Del Monte who make...
Well, no. There are some people that felt that somewhere down the line, the law could be applied like that because mm-hmm. as most things that are put up there, it eventually gets there. But as long as you're not making any money, you're okay. That's the difference in the food thing, for the most part. As long as you don't make any money, the government doesn't care. But
okay.
The moment you do, and that's why my friends at the farmer's market could give away their cheese. So the difference between it being safe and dangerous is whether money gets passed.
Okay.
So that's where it is. And why is that? Then they're saying that somebody's trying to corner that market. Because the moment the money gets passed, it becomes dangerous. But if you want to give away your Swiss chard, you're fine. right now, unless later on they wanted to keep this bill and, you know, keep putting the screws to it. It could eventually get to that.
Okay.
And,
so I couldn't have opened up a little stand on the side of my road and sold
my
bunch of lettuce. Okay.
No.
Even for a penny a bunch.
No.
Wow.
No.
Okay.
So, and, you know, something that I found out at the Board of Agriculture last month, well, it was this month, beginning of this month, I think that they're going to start, their language that they used was for brucellosis that cows get, the same thing that they, and it's already eradicated in Virginia. I think they're going to be coming after the cows next for the microchip, because on the federal level, we won the National Animal Identification, which was the microchip for all your animals, and we believed it would eventually gone, well, they wanted to do it with hay, so we've been under APHIS, about animal plants and insects kind of deal. They want to microchip everything or have a little chip so they can scan it. But since we won that on a federal level, they pushed it to the state, and that's where you got the scraping to come in, and they do it quickly. So I believe, because of some of the language that they use, that they're going to try to do, they were saying that it's outdated. It's been since 1985, which has been working just fine, but since 1985, they haven't had any new updates on the way they track animals. So I'm sure they're going to be coming after the cows now for the microchip and the premise identification, and which means it's sort of like in World War, to me, it's sort of like the Nazi Germany's where the Jewish people had to wear the yellow armbands.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel about the premise identification. When I have to have a premise identification number to have animals in my backyard, if I ever want to take them off my land. So if I ever want to give you a chicken, or, you know, right now it's a goat. If it's sexually intact, I cannot take it off my property. I cannot sell it to you without a premise identification, without a scrapey tag, and keeping records for 5 years after I sell it.
Wow.
And the government can inspect them at any time they want. It will be a class. It is a class one misdemeanor, which is punishable for, I think it's a $2,500 fine, and or a year in jail.
Wow. Crazy. Just to get a chicken. How can people get more involved? And I mean, and some people, you know, especially these people that are out here and they're, you know, they're clinging to their jobs, not making a bunch of money. They're working 40, 50 hours a week. How can these people get involved? Obviously, if they've got the time to go down to their legislation, that's a great way. You know, show numbers. You know, it's the power of the people. Put the government back in the hands of the people. But if you can't show up, what are some things that people can do?
Well, you can make phone calls, and that's very important. You can write letters. And one of the things, since I am vice president of VCFA, you don't have to join VCFA to get information. All our newsletters are online. You can get on the action alert. So when something is going to hurt your ability to get good food, we put it out there. And on our action alerts, we'll even give you the information that you can say or make up, you know, just, I usually tell people to just talk from your heart. Tell them your situation. You know, that was one of the things when you talk about people working these long hours, and they do, that when I started, I realized I couldn't get the food, but as a mother, I thought, well, wouldn't it be nice if I could grow it for somebody else in the community, and, you know, people that were working like that could still obtain food. And what happens is all these regulations hurt your ability to be able to do that.
Now, how do people get into, like, is there a website for VCFA?
Oh, it is. VCFA, I want to say the right one, it's VCFA.org.
Okay, so VICFA.org, and it's Virginia Independent Consumer and Farmers Association. So there's a place you don't even have to join, but if you do join, that's fantastic, because these people are volunteers. There's no paid positions. Is that correct, Lois?
Yeah, that's true. We actually, that's not Yes, in Vicksville. We do have a person that's doing our website and our layout of our newsletter, but she's not. I don't even think she's a member. I haven't even asked her to be one because of that.
Right. So, but all of you people that are out there, like, getting the information, boiling it down for people, you know, lobbying on behalf of all the other people that live in the state, y'all are not paid. I mean, obviously, you know, y'all have to.
No, and I think that's a good point. Even the president, the vice president, every board member, they pay the same $25. And the thing about that, like in agribusiness, you pay more if you make, you're a bigger farm. And I think that's important because it keeps things honest. If you don't like what VIX is doing, then you can stop, and eventually VIX goes away. You know, if you do, you support us. It's $25 a year. I think that's reasonable. You get a newsletter a month, and we have a potluck at each other's farms and houses as consumers every month, and it helps us network. And I've learned a lot by getting together with other people that are like-minded and networking to source my food if I need to. So I think it's a great opportunity. I really enjoy the meetings. So I just encourage everybody. But I don't
if you're
want
not in Virginia, I'm sorry, Glois. Go ahead.
That's okay.
I was going to say, if you're not in Virginia, we started again. You go first.
No, go on.
Okay, I was going to say, if you're not in Virginia, you can. You can look for a similar organization in your area, although not all states have the same type of challenges that Virginia has. So maybe you don't have an active organization. Maybe you have a more active organization. But, you know, educate yourself no matter where you live. And I've seen some of this stuff coming up in Canada, too. So, you know, with some of the Canadian friends that I have on Facebook. So you want to educate yourself because this is not – I've got a real sense that, you know, while we're having a problem here in the United States, it's not just a problem that's going to stay here. It's probably branching out into other areas as well. Lois, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's true. When you just said that, we have a farmer's market report that's on the radio, and you can get it on our website, too. That actually interviews farmers from Canada also and some of the things that they're going through. So we interview people from all over the country and in Canada so far on food issues. So that's a good thing to listen to.
Good. And I just talked with Susie this morning who said that you've got a date scheduled for some VICFA stuff. Can you and that's here in the Fredericksburg area, in our local area. Can you tell us what's going on there?
I know she said it's going to be at the library. It might be downtown. She didn't really tell me. It's more the Weston A. Price.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
That's fine. But we are having a VICFA meet in Beaver Dam at Beaver Dam Baptist Church just so we can be in that area. It's not a church function. It's a VICFA function, and we're just having it there. So I hope everybody feels welcome to come. And it's going to be at Beaver Dam Baptist in Beaver Dam. That's not too far from here. So from our area anyway, which is Spotsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and then also on the website, on the VICFA website, there's, you know, an area where you can go and look for events in your area. So if you're somewhere in Virginia, you can look for that. And, of course, anybody that's on Facebook can friend them on Facebook, whether you're in Virginia or not. It's a great place to keep up with things because then you could maybe find what you're looking for in your local area. So, Lois, we've got about 5 minutes left. What else? Is there anything else you want to get across to the consumers that you want to make sure that they are listening to, that, you know, just any message that you feel is important for them to hear?
Well, I think the biggest message that I'd like for every consumer to hear is just to start little. Let it grow. You don't have to make a little change. Try to get a little food at the farmer's market. Try to read a book about health. You know, it doesn't have to be overnight. We're all still working on it. I'm not totally sustainable at this point. I've been working at it for a long time. So even if it's just putting in some lettuce in a pot on your patio, that's a great place to start.
Okay. So you don't have to start overwhelming. I mean, you didn't go straight out and buy your cow. You started smaller than the cow, possibly.
Yes. No, I just, you know, I had to find somebody with one, you know, in this area. Hey, can I, you know, come milk your cow and pay you for half the hay so I can take the milk, you know? I mean, I just had to figure out how to do it. And that's part of the fun, you know? Using your brain and saying, ooh, what if, and rethinking this box that they put us in. That's what we need to do. We need to rethink it and realize the possibilities are endless.
Yeah, you know, that's so key, Lois. We turn way too much over to people we don't even know. We've never met them. They've never met us. I mean, and we just let them make regulations and guidelines and things that, you know, they're not living our lives. So people need to step up. And I say this is my little soapbox thing. You know, we need to take responsibility for ourselves, because no one is ever going to look after us as well as we'll look after ourselves. I mean, we have our own best interests. Doesn't mean that we don't have friends and family or people that love us and that the world isn't good. But if we're not taking responsibility for ourselves, how can we expect someone else to be responsible for us? It just doesn't work. It weights the world down, and in my opinion, it's part of what, you know, prevents peace on earth. So if we just own up, and, you know, like Lois said, make a couple phone calls. It doesn't take a whole lot. They have a lot of things online I'm seeing now where you just need to, you know, add your name to an email, or, you know, you just send an email thing into some of the congressmen. It is getting more and more simple to have your voice heard.
Absolutely. I couldn't say it better, Lynn.
Yeah, so, and VICTA's doing a lot of our work here in Virginia. You know, they're going out looking, and I know sometimes I'll get the information that comes through and it just seems a little overwhelming, and, you know, I try to take the time to sit down and read it, but, you know, I've learned, too, that, you know, if I have to pick between trusting the government or trusting this little organization, this little organization is probably a lot closer to my lifestyle and the way that I live and what I like. So, you know, if I'm picking between, you know, two people that don't know me or two organizations that don't know me, I lean personally towards VICTA, because, you know, they're just more like me. They're not out there giving themselves raises to keep themselves employed.
Well, the thing I always say is that the hardest part is the question. The answer is easy, okay? And when we just start asking these questions and saying, hey, why is this? And what can I do? The answer does come. But we have to have that desire to actually want the answer. And even though I do a lot of work here, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I just found so many blessings and joy in what I do. And so that's a good thing.
Right. And I, for one, am thankful for what you do, because I absolutely love that raw milk. And, again, I'd love to do a whole show on raw milk. I mean, you know, you were mentioned, especially at the beginning, that, you know, there was a lot to do there. I'd love to do that, you know, one
Absolutely.
Day, and you were talking about the global market. I wrote down a couple of, show ideas as you were talking. So
great.
I'd love to have you come back on and share your wisdom and your time. And I personally thank you, for taking your time out away from your home to go down and lobby here in Virginia to make sure that, you know, we've got rights. And, you know, I greatly appreciate that. I'm sure that you don't always feel appreciated on that part, but I'm sure I'm not the only one feeling grateful for your efforts.
Well, I appreciate that, and I am grateful that you've given me this opportunity to get this message out. I thank you for that.
You're welcome. Anytime. I was so happy that you accepted. So, Lois, I just want to take a moment to thank you again, you know, here on the show, for doing what you do, for being willing to speak out. So many people are just afraid to speak out. You know, I think that it's fantastic when people speak up, and they speak up, you know, from a point of education, not from a point of accusation. I think that's fantastic. We need more people willing to do that, and for doing such a great job here on the show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great.
I want to say that I didn't start here. There's a lot of blunders that I made, and don't be afraid to speak out and be where you're at, because when you're there, you can only do better, you know. And I think there's a lot of people that say, I don't know a lot, I don't know what to say, and that's okay, because none of us did.
Right, Right. And, you know, if you get down to, if you're going to go down and show up, it's the numbers that count. You're going to have people there that are already speaking. So, and then you learn, you know, just by the process of, you know, being there and observing. If you just show up, and you can show up, if you can show up regularly, that's fantastic. But even if you just show up occasionally just to show those numbers, that is, that's supportive of these people that are going down there like Lois, that are, you know, just taking their time out to make sure that we have that what little bit of rights we do have, that they remain intact.
Yeah, and I think we're all intimidated by that process. And, you know, just go with your heart. Just, you know, even if it's, I'm a consumer and I just want to be able to find healthy food. You know, I mean, it's just that simple. And they need to hear it. And most people are intimidated and they never say it. And so if our congresspeople don't understand what we want, if we don't tell them.
Exactly. Right. Well, Lois, thank you again so much. Our time has come to an end. I want to remind everybody that we've got Jose Ruiz on here on the 12th and that we're moving to Wednesdays in 2011. So I hope that you'll join us then. Have a wonderful new year and enjoy the rest of this holiday season. Thank you again, Lois.
Thank you, Lynn.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.